This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
Darius, I wasn't sure if you were actually going to ask a question or just make out with your mic.
Not sure if you're there or not. Gotta test you these days since your audio went out last time.
Alex Herko is the director of content for the reigning World Series champion Houston Astros and a former colleague of mine from the Boston Celtics. Alex's drive and passion for the intersection of content and business has helped him thrive in this role. We'll be diving into how to make those connections and work on getting the green light for production.
All right, Darius, do you want to time dot is it?
Already there. 35?
Yep.
Oh, geez. Let's do that again. That was so bad.
I heard so bad. We're in lockstep on mine.
Yeah, you're getting everything in lockstep, and then you're frozen.
All right, go ahead. Right. My clock says I'm a half second ahead, so.
I'm 0.62 seconds ahead.
Okay, so we should be about right.
So let's do 10.
That was pretty good on my end. Man. No?
That was way worse on my end. Well, we'll see what, see what it looks like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We will see.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we're joined by Alex Herko of the Houston Astros, Director of Content. Alex, thanks so much for taking the time to hop on and share your journey with us here on the Creative Sports Podcast.
Thanks, guys. I've listened to quite a few of these. An impressive run to get over 100 episodes on something like this. And I think what you guys are doing to provide value to the industry is super valuable and something that people should be able to tune into and use as a pretty valuable resource.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's been an interesting run for sure. Longevity and breaks in between, but it's been awesome to just meet with so many creatives and hear all the different stories. So with that being said, can you give us a little background? I know your story is a little different than some other people's with how you got into the industry. So can you just jump in and share with us your background and how you got into the sports side?
Yeah, I think obviously you and I having worked together before, you know a little bit more of this than people that are tuning in. So I had a different background getting into sports simply because I just never had my sights originally set on that. I went to school for marketing, kind of expected to be more in the general marketing space to, as I got into my career. Ended up moving up to Boston after school, and that's when I started really diving into wanting to have a career with a camera. Started a lot more photo-based, and it was one of those things like I leaned in heavy on just wanting a job with a camera. And when I say a job, I meant like any job. And so the first one that I took when I got up to Boston was I was at an elementary school portrait photographer, like not quite life touch of like bringing in a backdrop and everything. But we did the specialty of this company was environmental elementary school portrait. So I had like 5-year-olds on a stool in front of like a rose bush in front of their school to take little kids photos. So, and for me, I was stoked. I was like, I'm getting paid to take photos. I'm learning a lot. And then from there, it was just trying to continue to develop that. I took a job in a real estate production company that specialized in kind of luxury real estate photography and video in the Boston area. And from there, kind of continued to develop, wanted to focus more on kind of high level production, get into more of the Fortune 500 company from a production standpoint, and took a job in the Boston area with a small agency that focused on corporate communication video. And so all of that kind of led me to just be a better producer, a better project manager rather than just kind of starting with sports production. And then, as you know, kind of fell into the Celtics job in a really atypical way. Saw the job on an email from Glassdoor. Kind of my story behind it was applied once in October, didn't get a call back, didn't get an email, and the job popped up again, I think about 6 weeks later, and I didn't even apply again. But I had some different work on the portfolio that had popped up in that 6 weeks in between. And that was enough to get a call from you guys and kind of started our relationship at that point.
It's interesting because you talk about just wanting to find a way to get started and find a path, and you weren't necessarily focused on the end goal, so to speak. You just cared about what you were focusing on in the moment, learn more about the cameras and all of that. So like as you progressed in your time with the Celtics, being able to shoot, you brought more of a feature type of a shooting aspect to what we were doing on the digital content side. Can you talk us through how much you evolved and developed over the years and your willingness to pick something up and learn it on your own in order to get ahead and start to stand out more?
Yeah, I mean, I think the benefit for me was when I started at those first two really lower level jobs that I mentioned, like I wasn't surrounded by people that had much of a video background. I got to Mad Dash, the agency, and had somebody in Pat Eason, who's now my business partner that I work with on the side, who became just an interesting mentor and somebody who had been in the industry. And then coming to the Celtics, being surrounded by four or five people that had a really dynamic background in video production, you just pick up on more and you have more of a collaboration process. And then again, like when you have that intrinsic motivation to get better yourself, like if you're surrounded by people that you can kind of be a sponge off of, you get better a lot faster. And, you know, I think that the other thing is like, and you and I have talked about this a lot, the intrinsic motivation of caring about what you're producing. For me, like prior to working at the Celtics, I was making like recruiting videos for accountants and nurses to come to like a hospital or an accounting firm in Maine. So I get to Boston and, or I get to the Celtics and I'm making hype videos for the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's like, I'll pour everything I have into trying to make these things better and try to evolve the shooting, evolve the editing, evolve the storytelling. And I think that's where it came from for me, is it's just like, if you're doing what really motivates you and something that lights your fire, it's like, it doesn't matter the hours you're putting in or what you're getting paid. And like, and you got to ride that wave as long as you can, because that's how you're going to get better faster, because you won't even be looking at how much time you're putting in. And next thing you know, you spent dozens of hours more perfecting your craft than somebody who might just be doing it for the extrinsic motivation of whatever their paycheck is.
Having that background away from sports before getting into sports, how much do you think that prepared you and motivated you to, was it a motivating factor to, I need to go all in every day to try to catch up with these people who've been in sports all this time? Or was it just a day by day, just kill it every day and just go with the flow?
Honestly, the opposite. I think that the experience I had at that small production company agency, Mad Dash, it gave me a leg up in certain scenarios that other people didn't have. I think that I came in with a lot more client-facing conversation, a lot more understanding of receiving a creative brief from a Fortune 500 company, being able to come in and translate what non-creatives were thinking into creative thoughts and actions. And I think that paid really significant dividends when it came to partnership content and trying to make sure that you could take somebody with a non-creative vocabulary and take whatever they're trying to express and turn that into visual thoughts. And again, I think for me, I see a lot of people coming up in the industry and they want to to get into sports and are producing stuff and are getting on the sidelines and putting sizzles together of like single camera, 16 millimeter, like a sizzle reel that everything's wide, but they're on the court. And so like inherently it looks cool or it looks sexy and they're able to put licensed music under it. And so, yeah, like if you're somebody that's able to get good access to something and you have Jason Tatum there and you can do a 30-second sizzle and you got a Drake track underneath it, like it's going to look cool and it's going to look quote unquote good in this age. I had to learn how to make not cool stuff look good. So again, like I don't mean to harp on the nurses and the accountants or whatever, but it's just not inherently sexy content in the way that like new age media would have it nowadays. And so again, like learning to storytell and try to make things visually appealing that otherwise the industry was pretty bland. Like again, it was kind of an embarrassment of riches when I came into the Celtics of A, like having really cool, like visually appealing subject matter, stuff that brought energy on its own with fans and like a lot of sensory stuff with cool audio moments. And then you throw in a collaborative effort of being able to collaborate with somebody like Justin from a motion graphic side and somebody like Mark D'Amico from a writing side and all of those things come together. It felt easier for sure. But I think that again, I always say that having some experience outside of sports before you come in and doing a small production company or an agency or doing freelance to start. So you have more client communication, you have more kind of soup to nuts production ability and project management is a lot better than just necessarily coming in and just being a project eater that gets handed a project. You go and make a sizzle reel and you go from there. So I'm thankful for that track and not having gotten into sports right away. I think it's just paid dividends.
Yeah. And how much fast tracking did it help with having creative people like Justin, like others that you worked with that have familiarity with the organization already, but that you could just bounce ideas and creative inspiration off of instead of having to study, you know, every other sizzle reel or photography on the internet? How much did that speed up things or did that kind of slow things down in your mind?
No, it helps a lot. I mean, because you realize there are times where you see other people's work and you just say to yourself, like, I'm not very good, right? Like you look back at stuff that you thought was good. And again, the further you get in your career, you know, it's that whole thing. It's like the dangerous zone of knowing just enough to think you know it all, but not enough to know that you don't know anything yet. And so you come in and, you know, like the give and take of having people with subspecialties around you, right? It's like, again, Justin with the motion graphics side, John Picard, who's still at the Celtics, having a heavy broadcast background. And like, I had never held an ENG camera in my life. And so it's like, not necessarily that that's what I wanted to get into going to Boston, but it was part of the process then that's how they shot games. And if it wasn't for that type of tutelage, like it would have taken me a long time to figure out how to use one of those Panasonic ENG cameras and feel comfortable. But, and you know, I got there, but again, surrounded by people that had each of those subspecialties and then you just try to bring what you can to the table and elevate it and, figure out how you can pick your pockets of like, I came in, I had a drone background. I had kind of just an itch to bring new technology to the scene. Like I'd spent a lot of time with, like when DJI Ronins came onto the scene, like I was a very early adopter of those and trying to get some of the Steadicam stuff into the fold, into the Celtics. And, you know, like, I think it's for me everywhere I go. And I think that the further up I get and the broader my job gets with kind of covering more specialties here at the Astros with design and photo and video, it's like you really have to be anti-ego if you want to be good, because like I know my designers on my team are better designers than me, because that's not where I put my subspecialty. And I think that when I got to Boston, it's like, and I probably could have done it even better, you know, it's like you if you could go back in time and absorb more, like you probably would like try to find that right balance of absorbing the people around you and also trying to make an impact on your own. But you know, I think that that's the biggest takeaway for me with all this stuff is look at the people around you and like, don't be afraid to say, hey, I don't know how to do that. Can you show me? And carve out some time and have people sit down with you and learn, because it'll get you better really fast. And if you're somebody who's too proud to ask or doesn't want to admit that somebody next to you might have a better skill set in an area, like, it's hurting you, not them. So, I mean, put the ego aside if you want to grow, that's for sure.
You mentioned the Astros there. Let's talk a little bit about your evolution to get to Houston and where you are today, because you had to take a path like many people do to move and get promoted in a sense to be able to get to where you wanted to go.
Yeah. And, you'll obviously be as familiar with anybody or as anybody with this. I mean, I think that Boston, the Celtics was a very crowded digital space when we were there. I think that I had a significant desire and appetite to grow. And I think that with the two different legacy structures that were going on while we were there of a really significant kind of previous content era that was more broadcast, more old media style. And obviously we had a director on the content side that was a director of that group in Mark. And then you were the director of the new media group, as I would kind of put it. That's already pretty crowded and kind of convoluted. And for me, it was like there wasn't a ton of long-term growth lane there. I think that I had some cool opportunities while I was there to be able to take on bigger projects and bigger initiatives. And I put, because of my background at the production company and having a strong understanding of kind of the dollars and cents of making content, was able to really carve a path in the partnership content space, helping ideate and create on that side of the business. And I think that that's helped me grow pretty significantly and has paid dividends here. You know, I think that another part of it is just wanting to produce some more of the higher level content pieces that were offloaded when we were in Boston. I think that when it came to some of the things like the Nike jersey releases or like the intro videos and things like that, it's you know, you want to be able to take some of the big risks yourself, even if they come with potential failure, just because we had a really talented team internally. And I think that you want to try to go out and make some of those yourself. And I'll say, like, that decision to take this job and move 2,000 miles away and sell a house and have my wife quit her job, that was not easy. It was emotional. It was, there were certainly times where you question whether or not it's the right decision, but, you know, it's the old comfort zone is a great place, but nothing grows there thing. And you know, I was definitely feeling that there. And, you know, maybe it was sometimes overly impatient, but I think that as soon as I got here and saw some of the things we were able to do and try to rework some of the processes and see it come to fruition, that's when it's rewarding. That being said, it's like a lot of the success that I've been able to have here has been buoyed by the fact that I learned a lot in Boston, and a lot of things we did there were great. And again, like had colleagues like you and Mark, and be able to work with talented designers like Leanda and Sliney, and have some innovative thinkers of like working under Sully and Hutch. you know, and then a bunch of other people on the video side that we worked with that were good. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, it's organizations and people need to understand that organizations and personal timelines will not always align. And like, that's just what happened with me, right? It's like my timeline for my own personal growth was like, just, I felt like I wanted it faster than it was obvious that the Celtics were set up to do, just because it's like trying to make big organizational changes like that. It's like steering a big ship, right? And I didn't want to wait to try to kind of turn the ship around any icebergs or anything along those lines. So, like I said, tough decision to move, but I feel like has been the right one.
So you talked about having the opportunities to create with more of the bigger projects, more maybe what people might consider bigger budget projects, so to speak, that can be outsourced or maybe are more often outsourced. But as an internal team, you had the opportunity to tackle that. And this year, heading into the season, I know because I worked with you on it, you leveled up and you had an opportunity to take your content day to the next level. Can you talk about that process and background on how you pitched it to the team in order to be able to get approval to take it to the next step?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where the comfort zone thing, you just have to be prepared to not be comfortable, because every time you try to do something bigger and better, it's likely something that you haven't fully done before. And, you know, we went in and we had found a partner last year down in West Palm Beach where we do our spring training. And that's where the MLB content day, and for us, really a content 2 weeks, happens. Found a vendor down there that was pretty local that helped us kind of design a set that was malleable and kind of worked for the two things that we needed to shoot last year. And that was having our primary 2022 campaign, or 2021 at that point campaign, and our Space City, our Nike City Edition jerseys. And this year we basically just wanted to kind of do that on steroids, right? It's like, we knew we had our gold edition jerseys that we were going to have a secondary campaign for because we won the World Series. We needed a set that was malleable, that could quickly be turned over and have a different visual identity to it than our Ready to Reign campaign set. So we incorporated a video wall background, which you're seeing a ton all over the place because it just gives you a high volume of looks fast, and it just enhances movement, enhances energy. Obviously, motion design has become huge in the industry, and I think it's a great way to bring the visual identity of campaigns into the sets a little bit more significantly than a static background would. You know, we sourced probably three or four different bids. That way we could at least bring it to our VP and CMO to say like, hey, here's what we want to do. We've found a competitive price. We found a vendor that it is local that can help us do it on kind of a leaner budget than other teams would. And for us, it's doing it internally. We have to find efficiencies for sure, because we're not like, the budgets we had in Boston for intro video were insane. Like, I look back at that stuff and I'm like, some of the NBA, the NFL budgets that they're getting for those intro videos are like just massive in the, like, getting deep into the six figure numbers. And for us, we had to be more clever about, how do we maximize internal talent knowing that we should edit this ourselves? How should we maximize internal talent knowing that we can light it, like I can shoot it. We don't need to hire a DP for 14 days. We don't need to have a full gaff team there the entire time. Let's put the money towards the core competencies that we aren't as good at. And that's kind of where I reached out to you and said, hey, listen, we need some MoGraph that can help bring this to life, and is able to elevate in that space that we're just not quite as good at, right? So you know, pulling in the right talent from the right places that may not be easy to have internal. And then knowing what you have internal and knowing where you need to kind of shore up with external money. And it came together really amazing. I think that the final product for the dollars that we put in, like pound for pound, it's really, really damn good for how much money we spent. I look around the league and I look around at other sports teams and the size of crews and my own interpretation of how much certain things must have cost. And I know we could do bigger and better, but I think for what the content is, how often we use it and the type of core competence we have internally, I think we found the right mix of really making it look dynamic without necessarily having too much bloat and overspending in an area that might not be actually a revenue generator with something like an intro video and kind of some of those extra pieces that stuff turns into.
How much of that can you say can be looked at as a confidence booster for your team? Like to say, hey, we could go in this direction and just outsource everything, but I have faith in you and I'm putting trust in you and I'm going to sell it to the higher ups that we can do this. I'm confident that our team can do it and we can still pull in a Justin for the motion graphics and, yeah. You know, maybe.
My name has come up way too much on this podcast already, by the way.
Hey, we're giving you your flowers. Take them. Thank you.
I'm just kidding.
But no, like how much confidence does that give your team to say, you know what? He went to bat for us when he could have just, you know, punted us down the road and brought in somebody else to do it and spent heavens knows how much money on outsourcing.
I mean, for context, they've done it internally here before I got here. So I don't want to take credit for that. I think that what I am appreciative of here, and I hope that my team is appreciative of, is I'm willing to go to bat to go bigger and better with the team that we have and know that like we do have talent internally and with the right resources, we can make stuff that is really best in class without necessarily spending top of class dollars. And you know, I think for me, what I see a lot of value in is there are people on my team that are trying to grow. I'm trying to create opportunities to grow. And I think that giving reps in those scenarios for them to do it themselves, being able to let some of my content producers throw on the easy rig and shoot a few of the players with the Ari and get some of those reps, knowing that, that's the only way you're going to be in a position in the future to be able to lead one of those shoots yourself. Having them down there and seeing the pains of the process, which this getting that project to fruition was the most challenging thing that I've ever done in sports. It was riddled with issues and riddled with like how that sausage was made was terrible. Like it was some of the worst days of my life trying to make sure that everything ended up going right. And when you ask for more money for the campaign and the set than anybody had asked at the organization before you got there, like you better come through. And there's some fear behind that when things aren't going well. And I hope that just like I felt coming out of it, that my team also sees the fact that like, all right, take the risk, like be afraid of it, but like, you can pull it off. Like you can get through major issues. You can get through major hurdles. Like there will be times where you are kind of dancing on that knife's edge of failure, but that's probably when you're the closest to the best work. Again, it's like that. We keep coming back to that comfort zone thing, right? It's like, I kind of relate it always back to flying a drone. Usually the closer you are to crashing, the closer you are to really dynamic shots. And I think that I kind of relate back that to production in general of, you know, like it should be a little scary for sure, because otherwise like you're not trying anything bigger or different. And I want that to kind of spread across the team of don't think small right off the bat. Like don't think about the things you know you can accomplish. Like think about the thing that makes you just nervous enough, but still kind of falls into the experience you have. And, you know, I'm still learning a ton of that myself. Like, I'm going into each of these experiences being like, I don't know if we can do this. Like, I know we're capable of working and figuring it out. But I can't say that at every moment of that shoot that I wasn't like worried about it falling through. So, you know, and it's a testament to everybody that was down there with us, in West Palm Beach that stayed until 2 a.m. to rebuild the set, and, Justin being on standby, I'm gonna bring your name up again for late night adjustments when the video wall, was not as plug and play as we needed it to be. And we needed to reformat a bunch of stuff 24 hours before the shoot, 12 hours before the shoot, 2 hours before the shoot. You know, and then again, kind of upper management executives trusting that even though we're asking for a lot more money than years past, that it's like, all right, we'll show you that it's going to be worth it. We're going to bring it with a business case of how it's malleable and how it's going to drive dollars on the back end. And, when that stuff comes through, it's, you know, it certainly is a building block for next year. It's like, all right, yeah. Like if we could get through that in 2023 with all those hurdles, like we should be able to take on some more and know that hopefully the luck isn't quite as stacked against us. And if some of the other things break our way a little bit easier, we should be able to pull off something pretty insane.
Was it an easier sale winning the World Series going into this training camp, knowing what you had just come, like, let's ride that momentum? Or was it just a, you know, whether we had won or not, let's go bigger because it's the next year. We feel great about what we have, the product that we're putting on the field.
It's both. I think a big part of it points back to our City Connect jersey release last year, when we put out our Space City jersey campaign, which was one of the things we shot at West Palm Beach before last season. And that was a resounding creative and financial success. And we broke every City Connect record in the MLB, broke a ton of MLB records in terms of top retail sales in the day. Like, had objectively and subjectively one of the better creative launches in the league for that content from photo design and video. And when you ask for the dollars last year and then you come through big, and then that stuff ties into all the experiential marketing that the grassroots team does, the advertising, that the rest of the marketing group does, the way retail set up, the retail spaces for fans to have an experiential time coming in to buy the merchandise, kind of everything that goes with that, how that feeds into ballpark entertainment. And, when that flows well for everybody and your work then kind of gets evolved by all the people that then touch it and make it bigger and better, and it leads to huge financial success and top line growth and strong margins, that makes it an easy sell. And it's like, hey, listen, like, we're going to try to do that again this year, but with gold program, for the Nike jerseys, and then also knowing that we're coming in with an identity for our campaign this year with Ready to Reign, having written something that like only the world champs from the previous year could come in with this type of identity that we have this year, with kind of the written thematic of it, the visual themes. And I think that, you know, you hope that those building blocks of success then make it easier to get approvals. And this year it definitely did. And again, it paid off on the back end. And I hope that, that continues to kind of build and snowball from there, because, you know, it's not always easy, but when you get the buy-in quickly and you can quickly go into production mode and action mode, that's when you can really make things happen. If you're not waiting too many times for rounds of, like, are you sure you want to spend this in XYZ? Are you sure that budget is not too much? Or, like, we vetted it, we went through it. I remember the meeting really clearly when the CMO said, yeah, absolutely. You want to do this, this, and this? Like, go do it. Like, Anita would probably remember it too. Like, it caught me off guard. She's like, I think you're surprised at how fast I said yes. And I said, yeah, I am. And I just got up and got out of the room before there could be any reconsidering.
It's interesting though, too, because and I definitely want to talk about the World Series run last year. I know we kind of skipped over that, but the buy-in and approval and the trust that it takes to be able to pull some of that off and the business cases that you're making for it is not necessarily the thought process that a lot of people on the creative content side go into it with. Can you shed any more light on the business use case in order to get that Space City jersey off the ground and how creative played a role in that? Because it sounds like it needed to span multiple groups within the organization to be able to pull that off.
100%. My biggest thing, and if people are offended by this, that listen to this, I'm sorry, but it's my methodology. Like, we are not artists in our jobs. We are problem solvers that do it creatively. And like, I'm always of the mindset that, like, if you really want to be a pure artist, you probably shouldn't be doing it at an enterprise level company, like a sports team that's trying to pull in hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever else. I'm not saying you can't be artistic, but you are a creative problem solver. And that's, again, where the production company background comes into play. That's where, like, doing freelance and anybody that's done freelance knows that it's not just about how good visually your work is. It's about, can you go into a meeting and make sure that you are selling to the stakeholders that you're going to be reliable, that you are going to fit into their enterprise process of timelines and reviews and budget. And because we talked about it earlier, the working vocabulary, the people that are reviewing this stuff or buying this stuff or approving this stuff are very seldom coming from a creative background, particularly in sports or at the corp com level or anything. They might be marketers. They might be in advertising and hopefully knows what good looks like, but maybe not, right? And that's why they're coming to you. But they need to know that you know what good looks like from the financial standpoint and say, like, why are you asking me for $50, $75, $100, $250,000 to do XYZ? Help me make a business case as to why that's going to be advantageous and not just dumping money in. You know, like, maybe there's a time and place for that from a fan engagement standpoint and a brand building standpoint, but we're here to make money. Like, our organization, our owner Jim, is a fantastic businessman and super impressive, and just expects you to be thinking with the same methodology of how is it driving the business forward. And you have to be able to go in, if you want to be successful in this industry, be able to articulate the business side of things so the people that don't care about Boca and don't care about you know, like, speed ramping of animation or like any of those things, right? Like, maybe they'll notice. But when you start, if you try to go into a meeting and just say, listen, this is going to look sick, it's going to be super dope, get people wicked hyped, and like, that's not going to do it, right? It's, we know that we are, like, we went into this campaign set knowing that it was going to be multifaceted, that we were going to be able to build out a season's worth of assets, that we're going to drive the jersey campaign, that was going to be able to drive advertising to get butts in seats. It was going to drive the experience of fans once they got in the ballpark, keep them in the ballpark, create things that were very shareable that got to that second and third network of fans within the social media space. And that's the way that you're going to connect with people who are going to be approving the dollars, especially at the high dollar amounts that you start to ask for the big campaigns. And, you know, the more you can go into it with that philosophy and the more you freelance and are in those conversations on your own, actually trying to separate people from the money in that instance, the better you'll get at it. And that's why I think that at least doing some level of side work. If you're even if you're full time at a company, it's just invaluable in this particular industry.
So let's stay there for a second. It seems that there's a huge disconnect between the money people and the creative people. And you make a great point there when you say you have to know how to explain it when you go through the door to explain it, or having someone that can advocate for that. And we've all worked places where they want things to look great, but when you bring the money into it, it's like, oh, well, we can't do that. How can we as creatives, as an industry, kind of solve that disconnect to make this more valuable? Now, it's not product value and getting a return like jersey sales or ticket sales or things of that nature, but it's an entertainment business now as well, because people come to these games, the tickets are already exponential.
Yep.
And when they get in the seats, it's like, oh, or on social media, you want people to be excited about the product that you have on the field, even if it's not good or when it's great. So how do we solve that disconnect in this creative industry?
I'd say start with the ones that you know you can point to that are black and white that you had a direct impact on. And the first one that I'll point to is partnership, right? It's SpawnCon and sports. It is one of the few areas that is technically content revenue generating, right? Not tangentially of like, okay, maybe this video advertisement being 50% better led to potentially this many more site visits and then ticket sales, et cetera. That's very hard to prove out. Like, even with unique URLs and A/B testing, like, yeah, you can do it. In sports industries that are leaner and budgets are smaller, that can't throw millions of dollars at A/B testing spots like a Coca-Cola or a Google or somebody that's spending millions and billions of dollars on ads. Like, I'd say if you're focused and can prove out the ones that you can prove, and for us, it's all right. When I came in here to Houston, we in Boston, when Justin and I were there, we made some really dynamic SpawnCon, pushed the needle there, worked with our partnership team and business develop team to create a content menu and create a system to drive revenue that way, and bringing that philosophy here and then seeing really high six-figure and then low seven-figure growth in revenue directly related to content we're selling. It shows and it adds validation that, okay, this guy, this team is focusing on, it's not just about making the cool content for social that'll get a ton of likes. It's all right. Like, if we want to grow the group, if we want the company to be successful, if we want to be successful ourselves, we can point to that and say, hey, that's a contribution that we know we can point to and say, we created things that we knew would be organically successful. We put them in a menu. We helped partnership know which ones to pick for the right partners. It led to more sales. It leads to top line growth. We can do it leanly internally with just soft costs. So that's one proof point there. And then, you know, you got to be able to take that and hope that you get some buy-in on some of these other initial projects that might not have quite a direct A to B association from cost to return, right? Like the jersey program last year with City Connect, it's, could I guarantee that better creative was going to lead to record-breaking sales? Not necessarily, but I knew that if we put together the right launch strategy, the right post-launch strategy, the right assets to help all of those different groups that, again, probably the six or seven different departments that made that a success. And then again, don't miss your shot. Like, if you're having a hard time getting buy-in and then you get buy-in, you better come through, right? So like, that's one of them is like, you get a yes, make it a success. And I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, in terms of kind of closing the gap in terms of the vocabulary and the understanding. I mean, don't just expect the other people to be the ones to close that gap. I think that if the answer for a lot of people is, well, they're not creatives, they haven't done creative or X, Y, and Z, it's, well, are you not a business person, and do you not know, do you not have the business vocabulary to translate it to them? It's like, don't put all the onus on them to be able to close that gap. It's like, reach out to people and say, like, hey, how it, whether it's in your company or not, say, how would I have to pitch this to you for it to get accepted? You know, it's like, don't just worry about making your transitions better and making your lighting better or whatever else. It's like, if you can't sell the project, you're not going to get to make it. So learn how to get stuff approved better. And the best way to do that is to go to people that would be approving it and say, hey, how can I make this appealing and make the right business case to get this pulled off? And that's the another big takeaway, is just like not just focusing on those hard skills of the creative, because just showcasing better creative might not be the thing that gets the next project greenlit. It feels logical thinking that way, that, hey, if I showcase more great work, then it'll get noticed and I'll get approved to do more. You got to think about it in the ways that the CFOs, the CMOs, the owners of the companies are going to be thinking of, well, why does that matter to me? Why is that better creative going to matter? Like, is the better creative going to lead to better returns? And if so, then yeah, 100%, let's do that. So, you know, that's my philosophy with it. And I just would implore people to, you know, focus on that development side as well.
And with that being said, you know, the industry has gotten a lot younger in a sense, and a lot of creatives are getting hired out of college and from freelance and don't have that experience of knowing who is even the decision maker. And I tell people often that there are a lot of talented people in this industry that are just talented. They can make the best videos. Mm-hmm. They can kill it on a shoot, but they don't take the time to learn the other side of it, as you were just talking about. How important is it to talk to other people in your department, in the industry, that aren't just the talent creatives?
I guess it depends if you want to be an individual contributor or you want to move up, right? Like, there are plenty of people that are happy and want to spend their career being an individual contributor. And that's fantastic. And if, like, again, each person has their own motivations. If you want to move up and you want to move, you have aspirations of being in an executive wing or having a corner office or leading a group or being a manager and all those things, like, you better be able to translate the creative into the business side of things for sure. And, you know, it's, again, not everybody internally is going to have those answers for you. So, you know, reach out to people that you know, reach out to people that you don't know, try to find opportunities for guidance and mentorship. And then kind of my last point on that is, when you then have used that information and guidance that you've received to realize the goals that you have and you reach the position you want, come full circle and respond to that person on LinkedIn who's reaching out saying, hey, how do you do X, Y, and Z to get where you're at? Because, like, that's the way you can keep people growing. And if you're going to reach out for guidance and reach out for mentorship, like, when you reach your spot that you were looking for, don't then get jaded about, like, man, like, so many people are emailing me how I got my job in the industry, and you start deleting LinkedIn messages or cold emails from college students or people trying to break in. And so, you know, treat those opportunities as learning opportunities for yourself to kind of impart some of that wisdom. And if you're going to go seek it out yourself and hope that people are going to be returning your cold LinkedIn message.
So you just had your ring ceremony for last year's World Series. Can you give us a sense of what that experience was like, being fairly fresh with with the team and getting an opportunity to go through the World Series and all the late nights, long days, and time and effort and energy that goes into making sure that you're delivering the content for the fans and meeting all the internal needs necessary in those situations.
It is the pinnacle reward of working in sports, right? The thing that, you know, I think we all know in sports that the salaries and the hours are disproportionate, to other industries. And, but the best days that we have here, are disproportionate to your best days at another job. So I think that going through that and having that opportunity, having the ring day and having your name on a ring forever, you know, I don't want to pretend that like I had more than like a modicum of an impact of what happened. Like you like to think that what you do to drive revenue is helpful, you know, like that the more money you can help drive, the more you can go after top tier players, the more you can go after people at the trade deadline. But you know, like you're also just appreciative of the team performing on the field and being able to capture some of those moments. And we as content creators, particularly on the video and photo side, benefit more so than most in the sense that being in the locker room for the champagne showers and being in some of those intimate moments on the team plane traveling and things like that, it's you can't get desensitized to those. It's you know, those are invaluable opportunities that people would pay a whole bunch of money to be a part of, and you're getting paid to do it. And you got to take a half a second in those moments. And the ring ceremony was that of hearing your name called and walking up there and, you know, like sharing that with your family and my wife and kids who sacrifice a lot of time. Like I've missed my daughter's birthday before to cover the World Series, and that's painful. But then to be able to bring her out and have a special day with her and let her run around the field, it's that's the full circle stuff.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.